This time it gives me great pleasure to introduce Lee.
Thanks, Al. I'm Lee, alcoholic. And yeah, first I want to thank Al and Andrea for the invitation to come talk. I remember I used to live in Napomo, and this was the meeting. You know, this was like the meeting. And I remember Richard G. had this meeting and invited me to talk at it. And I was like, wow, I couldn't believe it, you know. And that was a long time ago. Long time ago. And it's good to see everybody here. Welcome to all the newcomers. Congratulations to all y'all taking cake. Yeah. And then the crew, like the crew's here. Glad you guys can make it, you know. It's funny talking around home, talking here, you know, it's different because a lot of y'all, a lot of the guys that go to the meetings I go to hear a lot of my story when I share in a regular meeting, just bits and pieces of it here and there. And I was talking to my sponsor about it, and he, because I'm nervous, I get them, you know, they've heard it, they've heard me share it, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he said, well, do they announce the meeting? At the meeting you go to, do they announce that you'll be speaking on whatever day? And I go, yeah. He said, well, good, then anybody that want to hear you just won't show up. Oh, right. And then there are a bunch of some newcomers and a lot of folks I don't know and a lot of folks we don't attend all the same meetings. So, you know, here we are, you know. My home group is a 39-man stag up in Cary Market. That's where most of these guys are from. Or we attend some down here, a lot of people, the Thursday night stag meeting. My sponsor is a man named Bob Darrell in Las Vegas, Nevada. And my sobriety date is December 10th, 1987. And for me, on December 10th, 1987, I woke up, I went to the front room, and I pulled down a fifth of whiskey. That reminds me, too, in the back up, I'm thankful Felina and my wife are coming. You know, Felina, tell my story. She's heard this. We were on a ship. We had our honeymoon on a cruise recently, and I was telling a little bit of my, I mean, it was part of my talk, it was in my story, but I left a little bit out, so she filled it in for me while I was sharing it in this meeting, and so she could, you know, hear the thanks for being here, love, I appreciate it. But December 10th, I woke up to HL, I went to the front room, and I pulled down a fifth of whiskey I opened the night before, and there was a finger left at the bottom of it. I don't know why I didn't finish it all. I packed out. I don't know. But I looked at the woman I was married to at that time, and I said, how much of this did you drink? And she said, none of it. And I said, damn it. I did it again. I had not intended to drink a fifth of whiskey all by myself again. I had taken my last final at Cal Poly. I came home. I was going to get buzzed, man. Just celebrate. So I was scared because I had done this before. I made a couple phone calls, and at noon that day I was at the Pioneer Group in San Luis Obispo. Don't remember who was there. There was one guy, Jack Flanagan. Robert might remember Jack. I don't think anybody else does. It's Jack was San Luis, maybe Keith. He was down in San Luis Obispo. I think he's up in the South Carolina now. But Jack was there, and it was a book study. Don't have any idea what was read. Don't know who else was there, but I know Jack was there. And the reason I knew Jack was there is because after the meeting, he came up and he said, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. And he started talking to me about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he had a big book. It wasn't in the cover like this, but it was a blue like this, hardcover big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he tried to give it to me. And I wouldn't take it. I'm like, no. And the reason I wouldn't take it at first is not because I didn't want what you had. I did. I can't drink. I know I can't drink, and I know Alcoholics Anonymous has something to do with not drinking. I need to not drink. The reason I wouldn't take it is because, as I mentioned, I was going to Cal Poly. At the time, I was paying 60, 70 bucks for books like this, right? And I figured that's what AA was going to charge, 60, 70 bucks, right? And at school, you could sell it back at the end of the quarter. I didn't think AA was going to buy it back, man. But Jack pulled me the deal, and I took that book. I have it at home still. And I tell you what, any of the newcomers, if you need a big book, I got them out in my truck, just like Jack taught me 34 years ago. I carry big books with me. Get them on thriftbooks.com. Third edition is usually now. It's up to fourth edition. Third edition is so old. But, you know, I give them away just like Jack taught me. And he must have said something about sponsorship, because I asked him, will you be my sponsor? And he said, sure. Mm-hmm. So at my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a big book, and I had a sponsor. How many of you can say that?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Every now and then a hand will go up. Unfortunately, I didn't read that book or call that sponsor for 5.5 years. For 5.5 years, I was what I refer to as stark raving sober. Stark raving sober. I came here to not drink. And I'm not drinking just fine. Thank you very much. You know, if I got called on in a meeting, and this is what Felina filled in for me the other day, if I got called in a meeting, I would share something like, I swear I would, I'd share. If you don't drink and you don't use, no matter how you do it, you're not wrong. I'd stop right there and then err. And then you know what would happen? That they wouldn't call on me again. So I punished that meeting. They're not going to call on me, I'm not going to go. Don't you want to know all what I can espouse to you? So within a relatively short period of time, I wasn't going to many meetings because I was punishing them all. Stark raving sober. 5.5 years of that, the woman I was married to read my journal, and within a couple of days, I was checked into the psych ward at French Hospital. I'll make it clear, it's a journal. For girls, it's a diary. For boys, it's a journal, right? Still a violation, but God has a plan. I don't know God's plan. God had a plan. It's been a couple days. And it was a miracle for a couple reasons. In the interest of time, I'm only going to say one. And that was because in that psych ward, I took my big book with me, and I took a 12 and 12, and they had pencil, and they had paper. And those of you that know, here you guys know San Luis Obispo, most of us do, and French Hospital. And you know, well, it's not a psych ward anymore, it's a maternity ward now, but across the train tracks is where the Pioneer Group used to be, right? And those of you that have been around enough long enough, well, they let me out, right? They let me leave the psych ward. They don't do that. When you get checked into the psych ward, it's a one-way door, right? But something happened, God of my understanding, and I didn't believe in it at that time, and they let me go to meetings, 7 a.m., noon, 5:30, 8 p.m. I hooked up with Eddie, Fast Eddie. I know Robert remembers Eddie, probably Jim, but you know, you remember Eddie. And he became my sponsor. But the thing about this psych ward is that while I was in there, I did my first inventory. I've heard you people in here talking about inventories, and maybe I asked Jack, I don't know. But I'm going to count them by trade. I know they teach me that in college. I know what an inventory is. I don't need a plumber to teach me an inventory, right? I'm good. So I did, but I didn't do it. So what I did is I took my big book, and I went to page 64, and I did what they did there. I'm an example of that. The cause, sex mind. I copy that. Sit down, I remember, 40 people, 45 people. Then I pounded my chest. Not my inventory. I didn't turn the page. I wasn't asking questions, and I didn't turn the page to page 67 where it says, setting aside the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked at our own mistakes. I didn't do that. I only did what you did to me. All I wrote on it was a grudge list. It said that the top page, it was a grudge list. But it's very effective for a couple reasons. One, I still have it. I didn't write on there anything I did. There's nothing incriminating. It's not about me, really. It's about what the world did to me. So I still have it. I didn't need to burn it or tear it up. And I'll use it with the guys I work with that are slow or like me, work at the speed of pain. If it hurts enough, I'll finally do the work, right? And I'll pull it out and I'll show it to you. You want to wait? This is what you got to look forward to because it's written on San Luis Obispo, French Hospital, Psychiatric Ward letterhead, right? It's too bad they start writing quick, right? Over in NA, you talk about jails, institutions, or death, right? I mean, it was an institution for me. And the other reason it's an effective inventory is because in order to do a second inventory, you have to have done a first. You can't just jump to your second. In order to do a third, you have to have done a second. To take continuous inventory, you've got to start somewhere, and that was it. How embarrassingly humorous it is. It was my first inventory. And like anything in life, I have found the longer and the more often you do something, the better you get at it. I share now, guys have heard this thousands of times, maybe hundreds, but I've done more inventories in the last 7 years than the first 27 combined. That's not an overstatement, not a hyperbole, not an exaggeration. It's the truth. Because I have found for me, well, like I said in the book, a business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. So I'm trying not to go broke. I'm trying to work on me. And those of us that have been around, those are folks in here in this room, this, I remember Jim's been going around a lot of the team with Robert. I remember Robert's first meeting. I was up in a room and upstairs. He would have to leave his first meeting. He said no. But, so I did that inventory, I got out, and Tuesday night men's tag up in Arroyo Grande, on Tuesday night, I think you guys had been, and it's still up there, and it was up there, Sovereign Cats back then. Anyways, long story short, I'm not going to get into all this, but I got out of cycle and I got involved in service. Someone nominated me to be the secretary of that stag meeting, and I took it over, and someone else said, why did someone nominate me to be the grapevine of that for the 22nd district? I honestly, God, didn't know what the grapevine was, but I said, all right, I'll do it. And then I got to stand up at every meeting and hold up a grapevine, and you had to look at me. Well, I know, wrong reasons, I get it, ego, but I still would stand up at every meeting I went to and announce the grapevine, and we got grapevines, and this is the grapevine. And I got involved in service, and like that circle triangle up on the wall there, I heard it said one time, if you get involved in all three, the unity, service, and recovery, you get enveloped by that circle and become a whole person. And that's exactly what happened to me. For 5.5 years, I was start getting sober. I came to meetings, sometimes maybe kind of part of a fellowship. If you asked me if I'd done steps, I said, yeah, I'd done 1, 2, and 3, but I hadn't, but I thought I had. Maybe 1, but I hadn't done anything. And I certainly was not involved in service. I didn't come here to pour your coffee or set up your chairs or do anything for you. But when I started doing that, things changed, and I became a whole person. Some of you guys remember a guy named Cliff Roach. Cliff Roach was a big AA speaker. I don't know who you remember. He was my sponsor for a long time. I wear a coat because of Cliff. He told me I always got to wear a coat. And also, he said, you always got to talk about what it was like. Because I don't like talking. I mean, we've all drank. We all have our stories. We all came, we drank, we're here, right? And I like talking about doing the work and where I'm at now. But Cliff said, no, you always got to talk about what it was like. Because there's some new guy out there that's going to relate, that thinks he's a unique. So, briefly, I'll share a little bit. I was raised by a single mom, and those of you guys, these guys have heard me a few times. Maybe some of y'all that know me, Jim's know me for years, you might not know this, like Robert, know me for years, might not. So, you know, I was raised by a single mom on welfare in the early 60s, man. I remember food stamps when it was like Monopoly money. It was fake money, and you had to pay with it, and it was so shameful, so embarrassing. And my mom would every now and again try to buy something you're not supposed to buy with food stamps. I don't remember any examples, not cigarettes or whatever. Just there's things you can't buy with food stamps. And she'd try, and they'd catch her, and they'd announce to the manager, and everything looked embarrassing. I remember that humiliation. And I remember commodities is government food that they gave away for free. It was a big block of cheese. It said cheese on it. That was it. And I remember like Acme cheese and Bugs Bunny and Roadrunner. That's what it was like. Acme cheese. It said peanut butter. You opened it with a can opener. And, you know, silver can. It said peanut butter on it, man. So I remember all that. I remember my mom was very, politically speaking, she was very left-wing. I remember peace marches, anti-Vietnam marches. There's some guy with my, you know, I couldn't tell you who ran 10 years ago, 15 years ago for president, but I know back in the early 70s, 72 I think it was, Nixon was running against McGovern. I remember that, because I remember Nixon was like the Antichrist, my mom was all for McGovern. I always think he's smoking pot. I remember all that stuff. My mom, you know, I remember all those things. My mom, I would say my mom was so far left, she's a danger to oncoming traffic, man. I mean, she just, but, you know, that's what I grew up with that. My role models were the guys up on the silver screen, John Wayne and Clint Eastwood. You know, those are my guys, man. Go on. Outlaw Josey Wales is my favorite movie of all time. Jordy probably never watched it. Jim's watched it. You know, they probably never heard of it, right? But I would pick on the other guys, you know. But you know how some people, maybe not, and Sam, bring the word a little bit, but maybe some of them know, but some people, if you ever go to see the Rocky Horror Picture Show in a movie theater, it's a movie, and you actually pick a movie. You better see the Rocky Horror Picture Show in the movie theater. You cannot hear the volume coming out because everybody's talking. Everybody knows every line to that whole movie in the whole movie theater. Well, like some people know, Rocky Horror Picture Show, I know how I really will. I've seen that movie. That's my favorite movie of all time. And I'll tell you what. 1 hour and 28 minutes in the movie, depending if it's cut early, so I've been corrected, believe it or not, in a meeting. It depends how many versions it's been cut for TV, you know, what's it, you know. But in that range, Josie Wales rides into this ghost town, almost ghost town, and there's these people talking, and a few people in the bar, and he walks in, and they get quiet, and they say, well, what'll it be, partner? And he says, whiskey. And they make a little bit, they talk a little bit, and they say, partner, we've been dried up in this town. We might have a warm beer in the back. But Josie Wales walks out, and then in that Hollywood fashion, you hear the spurs clinking as he gets a little closer. He kicks open the bat wing doors. He's got a case of whiskey in one hand and two bottles of whiskey in the other hand, and he's the man, right? They love him, right? He kills all the bad guys. He gets the girl. His former enemies respect him in the end of the movie. And I want to be just like Josie Wales, yeah? Unfortunately, in the real world, what you get is a suspended sentence for assault and battery, right? And that doesn't want nothing to do with you. No. Growing up, my relationships were 30 and out. 30 and out. 30 and out. Which I grant you is a somewhat oversimplification, but not really. But what's happened in 30 days is she's getting close to me. And if she gets close to me, she can hurt me. So I would sabotage that relationship before I let her get any close. Simon and Garfunkel have a song, I'm a Rock. It says, I build walls, a fortress deep and mighty that none may penetrate. Oh, yeah, I could relate, you know. A little further on, it says, I have no need of friendship. Friendship causes pain, you know. And there's that, Ben Harper has a song, Roses for My Friends. It's my anthem, guys. I mean, he says, the stones from my enemies, these wounds will mend. But I cannot survive the roses from my friends. And I feel that. So and I am not unique. Don't hear me up here saying I'm anybody different than probably half of this room. We've all been hurt. To the core. Quick. And see, if I could stay sober and not trust anybody, I would. But I can't. I cannot do it. I have got to trust somebody. Started with a guy named Tim Whitcomb down at Santa Barbara. Some of you guys know Tim. He was my best friend. Forever. We were tight. And then my sponsors, Bob D, and then, you know, Felina. And some of the guys over here have gotten pretty damn close. I've shared some stuff with some of these guys, you know, as we do with sponsors and friendships, you know, where we kind of grow together. And I've learned to trust now. But back in those days, no, man. I mean, can you imagine going to a high school dance sober? No. Al and I going, No, man, no. I go up and ask that girl to dance, and she says no, and I'm crushed. I'm devastated. I'm ugly. I'm deformed. I'm fat. I'm stupid. I'm here to just delete, right? But if me and Jack Daniels are hanging, and I go up and ask her to dance, and she says no, I'm like, well, you just look lonely, bitch. I'm just trying to help you out. And then you go and ask a friend to dance, and she might dance, and she's, well, you go hit somebody, right? You go hit somebody and start the fight, right? So when I drank, I went one of two directions. I got really, really romantic, or I got really, really violent. And to get romantic, you got to have a women partner. But not to get violent. I grew up on the beach in San Diego. And we had the boardwalk, and we used to hang out, me and the guys, and someone would hit somebody, and the guy, it'll be on. Some of you guys can relate. We've done it. Been there, done that. I was expelled from four schools. Kicked out. Not suspended. Take your son and go bring him back. Negative attention is better than none. Is what my thing came from. My mom did the best she could. Thanks to a guy named Bob Earl, another speaker. You guys, some of you guys, I know Robert, remember this is South Canyon Speaker. When we saw Bob Earl was there when we started South. He was our first. We weren't even supposed to start the South Canyon Speaker meeting. It wasn't a plan. But Bob Earl, this guy came and he spoke and he and I got to be pretty good friends, but that's how I'm not gonna go into that story. But Bob said, and I got it with him, he said, my mom did the best she could with the tools she had. Thank you, Mom. I love you. Amen. And that's it, you know. I got to that point where I could say that, and there's no but anymore. But nothing. My mom did the best she could with the tools she had. Thank you, Mom. Got it from Bob. And you know where else I got to it? When I finally did the work on Mom. Taxi cab Cliff. Again, I know I'm pointing to the same people, but he's now security guard Cliff. But he was my Cliff Henderson, Cliff H. he was my sponsor when I finally first did the work. And he told me, just do one on Mom, nobody else. And I said, Mom is on every inventory I've done. I had done four by then. I mean, so my fifth inventory. And he said, just Mom, don't even talk about anybody else. And it was in that inventory that I got free. You know, I only did Mom, and I only looked to the best I could on my mistake, what I had done, where had I not been a good son, what could I have done better. And I moved on from there. You know, I mean, it's amazing how these steps change our lives, or have changed my life, anyway. At about the age, I don't remember my first drink. You know, I prayed, I meditated, I've asked God. I don't know. What I know, I went to join the military at 17 and a half. I went in this thing called Special Forces. Right? As an Selena, what else is that known as? The Green Beret. Green Beret. I was a Green Beret. Why would I be a Green Beret? Because John Wayne was a Green Beret. That's right. John Wayne was a Green Beret. I was a Green Beret. John Wayne would have been a Navy SEAL. I'd have joined the Navy, man. But John Wayne was a Green Beret, so I was a Green Beret. This is my story. I can't change it. It's what happened, man. And I've had people come up to me afterwards, the next generation, my parents' generation. And a guy lovingly said to me one time, he said, you know, John Wayne was a Marine before he was a Green Beret. I'm like, I didn't see that movie, man. I joined the military, and I came back that first night, that first year on leave, first 6 to 8 months, whatever, on leave for Thanksgiving. And we went to the same house we went to for years. Grew up, like Jim was taking the cake here for 30 years. We went to that house for 15 years, whatever it had been, many, many years since we moved to San Diego that I can remember. We went to this people's house that were the same persuasion politically as my mother, left wing. And the military, I was there in my uniform. I just spent some boot camp. I'm proud. I'm proud of what I've been. I'm proud of what I'm doing. And they're teasing me, and they're not getting to me. I'm happy. I'm good. And then they said something that did. They said, you know, you look sharp in that uniform today. Remember that time you were 5 years old, we gave you that hit of acid? You were tripping that day, Mom. Man. No. And I said, like, you do. I was like, Curtis, right? George, my bad. George, like, George, get it. I was like, what? You guys gave me acid when I was 5 years old? I was angry and resentful about that for years until that inventory that Cliff had me do on my mom, and I got free of that. Now it's just part of my story. All right, I've eaten acid at 5. No big deal. If Liam was smoking pot at 5, you know, if we'd have met, if we'd have gotten married, we'd have been together a whole lot many more years than we have been now. And I remember stealing a six-pack of beer out of back at Thrifty Drugstore in sixth grade. So that's 11 years old. We used to steal switch malt liquor. Remember that? True story. I was talking in Lompoc. And I was like, you know, I don't even know if they make switch malt liquor anymore. Newcomer in the back is not the big. Yeah. Yeah, they still do, man, apparently, yep. And Southern Comfort, right? You head to Southern Comfort in the 80s, you can start grueling. Oh, you grew up these times with this guy here. All right. Anyway, but, you know, and when I matured at the age of about 14, is when for me, it's just Jack Daniels, Jim Beam, Old Crow. That's what I'm buying. And why? That's what real men drink. Real men drink whiskey. Look at John Wayne. Look at things. You know, I told you, walk in, got the girl, bad guy. You know, John Wayne, if John Wayne would have walked into the saloon and moved on over to the bartender and said, you know, pass the crack pipe, Pilgrim. You'd have another finger, because I'd have been smoking crack, man. But John Wayne didn't have the crack pipe. John Wayne asked for whiskey. Yeah. And I get it. I'm not unique. I've learned it. It's just my story. I heard a story about a kid down in L.A., kindergartner. That's 4 years, 5 years old, 5 years old. Came home and told his mom he learned a new word from the big kid. Yeah, his mom was just like, his mom said, what? You learned a new word from the big kid? What word did you learn from the big kid? And he said, er. He said, er? How do you spell it? And he says, I don't know, Mom. So, well, what was the context? How did you learn it when they taught it to you? He said, that's easy, Mom. They went like this. Ah, there's some potheads in here, huh? Yeah, I'm not a pothead, man. I did not like pot. You go, that does not mean if you went, how do you go, thanks, because I don't want to be up here, man. I want to be anywhere but up here. But I'm not big on pop. And my best friend in high school, he and I are still in touch today, Ronnie D, his dad was the dealer back in the day. And pop, he's got seeds in it. Yeah, Vinny, it did, man. Yeah, I mean, Jordy, the place has seeds in it. We used to have these things called record out, big black vinyl things, right? And you break the pot up and tilt the seed in, and the seeds roll in your roller. And if you had just bought some shoes, you'd have a shoebox top. It would catch the seeds for you, right?
Right.
But no, man, I moved out. Before I joined the military, I moved out on my own when I was 16 and a half, man. I had enough money for booze and rent. Not get stoned, get the munchies, you know. You get stoned, get the munchies, go to the refrigerator at 2 in the morning, what do you got? Ketchup packets from McDonald's, that's what you got. You have peanut butter, you have ketchup packets from McDonald's, that's what I had. You know, or Top Ramen, right? You always had Top Ramen. I do not understand. Top Ramen was 10 cents a pack 30 years ago, and it's still 10 cents a pack today. Why can't anything else be like that? You know, or macaroni and cheese, you might have a little macaroni and cheese, right? What's called macaroni and cheese? You don't got any milk, you don't got any butter. They got munchies and ketchup packets, right? So you mix it all. No, no thanks, man. Speed? I'm a meat freak as it is. I like my house neat. I'm clean. I'm good. I do not enjoy the sensation of my eyes beating me into the next room. I don't like it, man. That doesn't mean if you gave me some speed, I wouldn't take it, because I would, but I, you know, Cocaine? No, thank you, man. I didn't like the expense of cocaine. I didn't like the high in cocaine. I didn't like coming down feeling on cocaine. You know how many fifth of Jack Daniels I can buy with my friends are paying for that cocaine? I'm buying Jack Daniels. Thank you very much. That does not mean if you handed me a mirror with mine, I wouldn't throw it, because I would. But I don't like it. You know, much. acid. Now, I love acid, man. Acid's cheap. It's quick. It's easy. I might have been reliving some childhood memories. Didn't even know it. The problem with acid is you cannot take acid as an adult and convince even yourself that you're maintaining. Because you know, man, no one else sees that car melting, you know? It's just... And I joined the military, and I quit taking drugs just like that. Back in my day, they kicked you out. There was no rehab. They caught you drinking, or they caught you using, they kicked you out. So I didn't... I quit. I was in Central America. No problem. I'm not an addict. I'll do anything you want to share with me, but other than that, I'm buying Jack Daniels and Jim Beam. And back then, you know, the slogan was, it's a great place to start. And for me, it was. In fact, I got money to go to college, you know, through the military. I also got turned on to this thing called country music. I know. I'm like, no, man, country music, huh? Who the hell listens to country music, man? Don't raise your hands. I was in Bakersfield, the whole audience raised their hands. No, man, the rhetorical question, man. Hit is in the country music, man. I'm a beach rat, man. I like Rolling Stones. Not Beatles. If you're a Beatles fan, amen, namaste, whatever, but no. I mean, you know, Lovely Rita Meter May. You know, I Want to Hold Your Hand. Let It Be. Are you kidding me, man? I like Rolling Stones. Songs like Bitch, right? Rip This Joint. If you can't rock me, somebody will, you know? Or Tom Petty, You Don't Know How It Feels to Be Me, right? Or Jethro Tull, Not Running Down His Nose. I mean, there's some lyrics right there, baby, right there. Although my kids, Jessica and all my kids, I guess I may get to the kids. There's some guy named 50 Cent, I think, right? 50, not 50, not 50, 50, 50 Cent, right? And my kids, I went back and I heard my kids playing one day, and he said, hey baby, I love, to make it up to you, I'll do whatever it takes. I love you like a fat kid loves cake. That's pretty good too, I got it, man. Yeah. So I don't know, man, that's my, you know, and then I came in here December 10th, 1987, 5.5 years. On December 10th, 1987, I admit I was powerful over alcohol. But my life was manageable. Yeah. Going to Cal Poly. I had a wife, two kids at that time, 3.8 GPA, former Green Beret, loading trucks for UPS in the morning, man, at 3, 4 a.m. I mean, good Teamster job, right? My life was manageable, nah. Yeah. The problem is that you cannot, a person who's managing their life well doesn't end up in a psych ward. You just don't go there. If you're managing your life well, no one sees the need to put you in a psych ward. And I had to admit, I was forced to admit, my life is unmanageable. And I did. And that's my board. And then I'll do a couple and then I'll sit down. I'm not going to ask my step or stuff. Don't worry. But, you know, I want to talk about family, too. I'll do a couple. Because you guys always hear me talking about inventory. Well, you know, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Well, first of all, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and I didn't want to hear about God. I'm one of the ones with my neck hairs bristled when you mention God. I didn't know. You have God if you want God, but no thank you. And then I used to share that the only reason I didn't get drunk those first 5.5 years is that I got lucky. Straight up, I got lucky. I don't know, man. And when we were over at by DMV in that little Quonset hood looking thing, I don't know if I was speaking or if it was just a share, but the guy Jim needs a sponsor. He's still here. He's back. We used to call him Catholic Brian. Because he's very religious, right? And he moved to Fresno for a while and he's back now because I've seen him a few days. Yeah? Catholic Brian came up to me after a meeting. When I shared that, I got lucky. And he said, you didn't get lucky, lady. He said, you had a God in your life looking out for you and you didn't even believe in him. And it hit. I can't explain it. It wasn't like a white light. I fell to my knees and I'm all God conscious now. It wasn't anything like that. But I thought, it just hit. I found a God of my understanding in that Quonset hut by DMV. After that guy said that. You know? And then, you know, I started going to church. I went on a men's retreat to Santa Cruz Mountains with my church, Calvary Chapel in Rio Grande, and became a Christian. Hey, cool. Right on. That's cool. You know, and then I went up to upstate New York with my daughters, her Emily, I don't know who knows Emily, but Emily, her secondary major at college is religion. She's really into religion. Still is. She's up in Santa Cruz Mountains right now. She's working at a Quaker retreat center. But she had me come up to a Buddhist monastery in upstate New York, and my life slowed down. I found meditation. I was 20-some years sober at the time, and if you asked me about step 11, I said, yeah, I'm praying. I wasn't meditating. I didn't know how to meditate. I wasn't sure how to do it. No one ever asked about it anyway, so I'm like, yeah, I'm good. Well, the Buddhists don't care. They put you in a room and say, we're going to meditate for the next hour. And so we did. I did, and I found it. It happened, and I'm good. And in New York, and I want to wrap this, but in New York, they have these things called boroughs, little neighborhoods of groups, ethnicity, Puerto Ricans, Cubans, whomever. But one of them was the Hasidic Jews. And the Hasidic Jews are so supremely proud of who they are and their heritage and being Jewish. And I'm Jewish, right? My mom left my grandparents in Florida, came out to California, and left all that stuff behind. It was before I was born, but I mean, left all. I don't know anything about my Jewish heritage, but I thought we were ashamed or something. I didn't know. But I saw them, and I said, I want to know more about my Jewish faith, God. As I'm leaving New York City after all this happened, a young Hasidic Jew, I'm in the airport, a young Hasidic Jew, and you can tell because of the way they cut their hair, they have long beards and long like things right here, sideburns. And he said, are you Jewish? Now, the prior 45 years of my life, I would have said no. But because of what happened to me in that monastery and seeing the Hasidic Jews, I said, yes, because it's true, I am. I'm Jewish. And he said, we need you. Okay? And it seems in the Jewish faith, they have this thing called a minyan. And a minyan is 10 or more men praying together. 10 or more. They had 9. I was their 10th, right? That is the God of my understanding, right? I went over there, prayed with them, don't know what they said in Hebrew. I was crying like a baby just to be part of it, not thinking of John Wayne or Clint Eastwood. I was just thanking my God for such an experience. So I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and my neck hair is bristled when you talk about God, and now I consider myself a Christian Buddhist Jew. And that works in Alcoholics Anonymous, man. I'm going to go on this. I got to talk about family a little bit. I haven't talked about family in a long time. If you have a problem with God like I did, there's a song by Joan Osborne of One of Us. And she says, if God had a face, what would it look like? And if you want to see, you see me, you have to believe. If God had a face and you could look at it, but if you look, you'd have to believe, would you look? And if you said, well, yeah, then you're willing. And that's all you got to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. Proved countless times, over and over, that all, it says I'm 44, I think, willingness is crack the door of willing, crack the door of all the rest of it. And that's exactly what happened for me. You know, someone talked about getting down on your knees and praying. I'm like, oh no, man, real men don't get on their knees. John Wayne, you know, Clint Eastwood was a preacher and tell writer. He didn't get on his knees. And someone, it was back, Robert O'Mackle, when we were upstairs in the Village Group upstairs, is where I was in my home group for a long time. Someone said, well, put your shoes underneath your bed at night. Blue shade, lock the door, put my shoes underneath my bed. Say a quick prayer. And I'll never forget coming up off my knees when I said that first prayer that first time. I never, the humbling, the growth, the God that was in me. I can't explain it. I didn't start praying on my knees every day since then, but I can tell you the last 15, 20 years, I roll out of bed every morning on my knees, and every night I get on my knees and reach for her hand. We pray together every night on the way out. And in the morning, she's still sleeping. She sleeps late. But I will not touch her. I usually touch her and pray on my knees. And that's made a huge difference in my life. You know, family disease, family recovery for me. And like Allison, I support the heck out of Allison. How do y'all know Allison and her two kids? And any parent, I'd rather have you here with your child disrupting me while I speak, making me forget where I am in my talk. But you're here sober? Amen. Come on. Anytime, any night. I don't care. It's how I've always felt. I used to bring my kids. Robert remembers because I used to bring all my kids, not all at once, but I'd bring just like Allison does. We didn't have the iPhones and stuff because we play with that, draw coloring or whatever, but my kids, one time they went to a birthday, they used to come here. This is my home group for a long time. This meeting. And they come here and then they went to a birthday party. They did that happy birthday to you. My kids say, keep coming back without a drink. They didn't know, man. That's what they knew. It was right here. That's what they knew. 1993, the Chargers, when I was a big diehard fan back of the Chargers for the move to LA, which is a whole other story. But anyway, 93, they went to the Super Bowl. Well, back then, there weren't many Charger fans anywhere except San Diego. I lived in the Pullman at the time. So I got in the car with my two oldest to drive to San Diego and watch the game on TV once with a bunch of other Charger fans. My kids, you know, and most kids travel bingo or traveling with your child, you know, whatever. My kids grabbed Advil, pieces, and the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they sat in the back seat and tested me. They read pages in the big book and said, okay, Dad, what page? Yeah. And then South Bank Speaker Meeting. Again, Rob will remember, but my daughter Jessica. Anybody go to that Ice Cube concert last night? All right, the girl up on stage, the blonde, that's my daughter Jessica. That's my daughter. She's all involved. She was on Sunny Country for 5 years, and it said follow, it doesn't matter. But Jesse started here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And again, anybody remember Cliff Roach was a debate teacher, right? And he talked in O2 side. If you ever hear him, you'll never. But anyway, he used to take credit for Jessica. And I'm like, no, it wasn't you. It was me. It was alcohol. You know, but she's a good talker. Where did I go with that? Which story was I starting?
You're going to the Charger game.
Oh, the Charger, yeah, man, you got to thank you. Don't think of it. I love you, bro. But anyway, they did that, and then they tested me on the way down, right? And then, Jessica one time got invited to this. I was secretary around the world, I was with South Carolina Speaker Meeting, but my daughter Jessica used to come and count the seven traditions and sell the cassette tapes. That's how long ago this was. You even know what a cassette tape is? She used to sell them. And one night on the first Saturday of the month, as you guys probably know, the South Carolina Speaker Meeting on the first Saturday, she got invited to go to an overnight summer party with a bunch of other 9-year-old girls. But it happened on the first Saturday of the month, and she came up to me and said, Dad, what should I do? And I said, Jessica, go be with your girls, man, it's fine. And she looked up at me and she said, seriously, she said, Dad, I have a commitment. I have to sponsor me, man. I swear to God, I had guys I sponsored that wouldn't show up at that meeting because of a girl, right? They wouldn't show up at that meeting again. And my daughter, you know what, she came, she counted the seven traditions, she sold cassette tapes, and we dropped her off, and she didn't miss a beat. But that's Alcoholics Anonymous. How did she, you know, when Jessica was down in San Diego on radio down there for a long time, she got, after that staff meeting, and after everybody left out, Jessica stayed after and cleaned up the stuff, the coffee cups or whatever, and her boss noticed, right, and said something about it, and she said, I just learned that from my dad. And then later she got promoted, and did that have something to do with it? I don't know. I think so. I believe so, and it all came from here. Constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs, right? God has been good to me and my kids and my family. And now we're the Brady Bunch, you know, Flames 5 and my 4. It's like, and they all get along, you know, pretty much. I mean, we don't know, a couple of them are out of town or out of the area, but all the girls love each other. And we've come together and it's been really good. And then finally, a few minutes of inventory. I have found for me, anybody split wood, you know, from the guys, you know, maybe girls too, but if you split, not with a hydraulic splitter, I'm talking about with a maul, you cut them in a round, and then you get the splitter, you get the maul, and you get the axe. And until you get good at it, it's hard, man. You get there in rounds, and you're supposed to split, but you miss that maul, or there's no good spot for it, and you just do your, but eventually, the more you do it, the better you get. And you get just like anything, baseball, then you can get that maul on the first day split in two. Right? Inventory for me are like the hardest part is getting started. But once I get started, I've been able to figure it out. And they're jokes. They're bad. The guys I sponsor to work, guys, they'll tell you, I don't regret grammar, spelling, function. That's not what's important. What's important is figuring out what my mistakes are in there. And so, you know, and then sometimes you split the halves and the quarters. It's easy. You know, the better more you do it. And every now and again, there's a knot. Right? And that's one of those really bad resentments, right? And it won't split right there. You got to do a little more work on that one. Those inventories have been, doing that work has been, and it's 10, like I said, and then we did step 10 a couple weeks ago in the book study, because it's the 10th month, and so it talks about exactly that, taking a regular inventory, doing it continuously, because I've heard, some word got back to me that people were jokingly criticizing me for the number of inventories I do, saying, well, if you did it right, if you did step 6 and 7, you wouldn't need to do so many inventories. Yeah, I don't know, maybe good, if that works for you, great, that's not what works for me, what I do is the work, you know. So for me, you know, it's become, like I said, family disease, family recovery. We're here, Felina and I are here now together. We met here, as many of y'all know, and it's been a long, hard road, but, you know, it's been fun. And finally, what I'd share, two things. And I shared this on the boat, and one of the guys really appreciated the act, and he shared it later. You know, I never read that. 5.5 years to start paying you sober, blah, blah, blah. And I read 2 pages a day, absolutely no matter what, out of this book. Person has 64 pages. 2 pages a day, absolutely no matter what. I've been doing that for about 20, 25. I heard it in a group, in our home group, Robert. Some lady upstairs in the village group said, she read 2 pages a day. And I thought to myself, like some of you just did right now, that's stupid. They're in chapters. You can't just read 2 pages. That's stupid. But I did it. The other problem with chapters is that it takes forever to read a whole chapter, so I don't have time. 2 pages, 60 to 90 seconds. But then it's just any hard words, right? And I know the book. I know the book. Am I trying to impress you? Absolutely not. There are people drunk who know the book better than I do. It's just a tool that's been laid at my feet that I chose to pick up. You know. And these guys have heard it because I share this all the time. Alcoholics Anonymous is absolutely the best thing that's ever happened to me. I love Alcoholics Anonymous with my entire heart and soul. And if that doesn't resonate with you, if you think I'm crazy or insane, or you just don't get it, I hope and pray you stick around long enough that it does make sense. Thank you very much.
Good show, man. I feel really about it.